Howdy do, buckaroos. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, December 18th, 2018. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Nap time?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent.
All right. Excellent. So,
good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll nap in a little bit. First, we have a couple things to talk about.
I see.
Now, never needing a nap, our friendly neighborhood robot, John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Good morning.
So, the first topic that I want to discuss with the two of you today is an interesting article that we saw in the New York Times. And it was an article about how Steve Jobs in particular wanted to bring Apple hardware manufacturing to the United States and how it was kind of a mess.
Started off in the United States, central, right? He didn't want to bring it.
Oh, no, you're right. Correct.
I mean, you know, it started off in the United States, and he had a fancy factory built.
Yes.
And then when he was at the next computer, he had another fancy factory built.
Yes.
And the
man did love a fancy factory.
Yes, he did. The interesting thing is, John Markoff is an excellent, excellent reporter. He's an excellent writer. His books are generally speaking terrific. He had a lot of one-on-one access to the giants of Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. But he kind of goofed on this because, like, he talked about the next factory never being able to achieve the needed volume, and the reality is that Next couldn't actually sell the needed volume to justify the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's that point. And then Apple also struggled to generate Macintosh volume for several years.
Yeah. And that's specifically what we're talking about here is Steve Jobs built a factory to build Macs, the original Macintosh.
I like Markoff's phrasing. He said Steve Jobs had an abiding fascination with the tradition of Henry Ford and the mass manufacturing of automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I can see how somebody would be obsessed with that because Henry Ford was so successful.
Mm-hmm. And you see a certain amount of that in some of the stuff that we hear, you know, as like a Henry Ford quote and then being able to liken that to a Steve Jobs quote. You know, Henry Ford always said, you know, people can have whatever color they want as long as it's black.
This is another example of people's heads getting ahead of the technology. There's so many things we tried to do in the 60s, 70s, and 80s that we just take for granted now with computerization, AI, and advanced manufacturing techniques that we can do now. I mean, if you look at stereo equipment or computers built in the 60s and 70s, you know, with metal that's been bent by mechanical means and plastic knobs, you know, we tried so hard to be cool in the future, but we just didn't have the technology development and refinement and machining techniques that we have now. But people's heads were, like Steve Jobs, were way ahead of the manufacturing technology and probably helped push it quite a bit.
He did. I mean, but, you know, we're talking about the past. Decades in the past, you know, I mean, do we want to talk about manufacturing today and trying to manufacture in the U.S. today?
Let's do that.
Kelly?
Well, I don't. Yeah, go for it. I honestly don't know that we would do any better I don't know that Apple would necessarily do any better now with a manufacturing facility in the United States than they had. Than they did in 1983 when they were trying to create a factory to build the Macintosh with. And I think most of that's just because the most hands-on manufacturing when it comes to technology has been handled in other places for so, so long. It would be really hard to even, you know, say it took 5 years to ramp that up to be equivalent so that you couldn't tell the difference between, say, an iPhone that was manufactured in China and an iPhone that was manufactured in the United States. And in the 5 years it takes us to get to where they are in 2018, it's going to be 2023. And all those other manufacturing practices are going to be light years ahead of where we are, and we'll always be catching up.
Well, more to the point, Kelly, Tim Cook has said that we don't have the manufacturing talent or culture in this country. Remember, mm-hmm. in China, you've got virtual towns of people who sleep where they work and eat where they work and develop special techniques and skills by virtue of that culture mm-hmm. to, you know, assist the machinery and the manufacturing of iPhones. We don't have that mass culture and engineering manufacturing talent in this country, and it would take a lot of time to develop that, and that's not the way Americans are accustomed to living.
I think we need to take a step back, because it's not that Chinese workers sprung from the womb,
no,
you know, ready made to do tech stuff. I mean, it had to be built up in China mm-hmm. too. So, right. like, if a decision was made to try to do manufacturing in the U.S., it could theoretically be ramped up, except for the sheer number of workers needed to do what Apple does. Apple makes so many products and so many of the same product. Mm-hmm. It takes an absolutely enormous workforce, and it takes a mobile, flexible workforce. And this is something I've pointed out in many discussions about this in the past. In the United States, our ancestors, forefathers, but possibly even, you know, living relatives, or at least a generation before that, fought and died to not have to work like people willingly work in China in particular.
Okay.
And you can, like the where in the United States today could Apple or Foxconn or anyone else build a factory where 450,000 people will work, mm-hmm. or 500,000 people, or 250,000 people,
and they're going to
work, and they're going to work for they're going to work 80 hours a week for 3 months for the ramp up, and then, you know, 100,000 of them are going to be laid off, but then mm-hmm. they're going to be there right there again the next year to do the same thing. That's not, we don't have the population density. We don't have the lifestyle expectancy. We don't have the labor laws to allow that for the better, I might add. Yeah. I'm not saying that we should have those labor laws. And like, it is not possible to replicate the kind of manufacturing culture that has evolved in China in the last 20 years. But what will and could change is advanced manufacturing robotics can take the place of people. And I've said
that's the hot button I want to get on. Yeah.
The only way manufacturing for Apple is going to come back to the United States is if it's either legally required, mm-hmm. which will be a disaster.
Yes.
Or all the people are fired and it's robots that are doing the work. The jobs are not coming back.
I have a vision for that evolution. You're right, Brian. Instead of going backwards and trying to replicate the Chinese culture, we should go forwards and have Isaac Asimov-type, iRobot-type, individual, intelligent, sentient robots partnering with dumb machinery.
Sentient? Oh, come on, dude. You're going to sentient robots?
Well, you got to have a level of intelligence and decision-making to augment the dumb machinery that, you know, fabricates.
But that does not necessarily mean sentience. I'm going to stand on my sci-fi soapbox and go, bah, doesn't need
sentience. Well, the reason human beings are involved in the process is because the machines are not yet smart enough to do the whole manufacturing process. There's still decision-making and handling and the delicacy and judgment of human hands that have to come in, minds that come into play.
None of which requires sentience.
Final construction.
Right. Sentience. So hold on, though, for one. Sentience. Hold on. Are we, I think at this point we're sort of neglecting the Mac Pro, because at least some of that happens in the United States, right?
Yeah, really low volume.
And is it true? Yeah. But how much of what goes into building a Mac Pro is robotics versus humans?
A lot, but it's really low volume.
Right. I'm not saying it's, it, you know, yeah, now that they've figured it out for the Mac Pro, it should be used to make iPhones. I'm not saying anything like that. But it is a thing that exists now that is happening. And that was really it. I just, I know that there's a lot of robotics in that one because I remember they showed us the video of making a Mac Pro, and it was a really cool video.
That's a very good question, Kelly. Given all we know about the 2019 Mac Pro, will the same manufacturing techniques apply that were so tuned to the black cylinder design of the 2013 Mac Pro, or will there have to be a whole new manufacturing technique given that the 2019 Mac Pro is totally reimagined?
Yeah, it'll be different techniques. And a matter of fact, I can't imagine they're going to go down the same rabbit hole they went with the trash can Mac Pro. Yeah, of course, you know, I'm all prepared to be disappointed on that particular front. But either way,
I believe a lot of people are.
I'm talking to you on my trash can.
I am jealous that you have it on your desk. For what that's right. It's still a pretty, okay, sorry, rabbit holes.
Return from subroutine.
Exactly. Or as Fish would say on Ally McBeal, bygones. the point is that the Mac Pro is going to continue to be a low enough volume product that Apple mm-hmm. could choose, probably, you know, says the guy who doesn't really know, to make that here in the States or in the Austin facility. That is certainly mm-hmm. possible.
Brian has told us more than he knows.
Yes.
I really like that yardstick. But I do think it's an interesting idea because that was a thing that I wondered when we started hearing about, you know, Apple doing a bunch of hiring in the United States. And we haven't heard a whole lot about facilities yet. I sort of wondered if that was something that they were going to talk about, because, you know, we've talked about like the imminence of the next generation of Mac Pro, and if we get a new generation of that, I assume they would stop making previous generation of that, and if that's the case, then what happens to the place where they're making those? So that's a thing that I've sort of wondered about, and I don't know if we have an answer at this point. I would like to think they would reconfigure some robots and, you know, that's where they would come from, is the same place that they come from now.
There are people that work in that facility in uh-huh. Austin.
Sure.
But I would imagine that Apple could continue to make that kind of product in Austin.
Yeah, as do I. I imagine it's, and I would like to think that we will hear more about that in the very near future. Because
we're at the point now, Kelly, where AI is evolved to the point where manufacturing systems will be designed by AIs, and manufacturing systems will start modifying themselves, start refabricating themselves on the fly to meet new needs.
But John, you're getting ahead of me.
When they start making the robots to repair themselves.
Oh.
That's when we can just like sort of inception out on this.
Yeah, that's when we know.
You know how that thing, like I've said, that what the Mac Pro is really waiting for is the Apple design processor?
Yes.
What if it's also waiting for the Apple design robots to make them?
That's a valid question.
Instead it's waiting for the Apple design robots to make them?
That would be interesting, and I would really like to know if we find that out.
That's a good point, Brian.
I would like for them to say so. Like, the reason this took so long was because we had to conjure up a bunch of robots that were able to build this machine.
I don't want to hear that we're waiting for the robots to make it.
No.
Maybe it's a prototype for, if you can do it with the 2019 Mac Pro, maybe you can extend that technology to iPhones.
Nah.
No.
Too many of them. Too many of them.
Yeah. It's going to be maybe the Mini, I would say.
Well, there's a possible future where the Chinese government and industry wants to eventually take over that market from Apple.
Well, we will have to talk about that in the future.
Chinese phones are making big headway.
We're going to have to talk about that in the future, because as soon as we have something about that, I'm sure I'll have both of you on to talk about it. Right now, what I want to talk to you about is our sponsors today. Our first sponsor is OpsGenie by Atlassian. And when it comes to incidents, either planned or unplanned, what it comes down to is how your company responds. Prompt and precise alerting is the critical first step. And because applications are more complex than ever, incidents require coordination between operations teams and software development teams. That's where Opsgenie by Atlassian comes in. Opsgenie empowers dev and ops teams to plan service disruptions and stay in control during unplanned incidents. Teams can respond quickly and efficiently, and the right people get notified because of all the integrations with lots of different services. Visit opsgenie.com, OPSGENIE.com, and sign up today for a free company account, and you can add up to 5 team members. Our second sponsor today is JamfNow, and JamfNow helps you set up, manage, and protect Apple devices on demand. You log into your web dashboard, you take a good look around, you can see all the information that you need about your devices. This is macOS devices, iOS devices, and you can keep track of what operating system version they're on. If you want to encourage people or discourage people from a system update, you can make sure that you have all of that information in front of you. You can track the serial number, the model. You can manage email settings. You can lock down Wi-Fi settings. You can add additional Wi-Fi settings and lots more. 3 devices are supported for free, and additional devices are $2 a month. So if you head over to the Jamf website at jamf.com/TDO, you can sign up for your free account today. Now, the other thing I want to talk about, John sort of alluded to before the break, and that was artificial intelligence. And
one of my favorite subjects.
Being artificial intelligence, John is our subject matter expert in this area. So what we want to do is talk a little bit about that. So, John, go for it.
So there was a recent report from the AI Now Institute. That's a research group affiliated with New York University. It looks at cutting-edge technology's impact on society. And there was an article about this recently at Fortune, which says that one of the takeaways from this report is that artificial intelligence has to be regulated in certain areas, like such in criminal justice and healthcare and facial recognition, where AI techniques could be used by governments in warfare and used by the justice systems and governments for discrimination, or healthcare companies. Discrimination or unethical practices against the citizenry. And we have to have a kind of a national ethical viewpoint about how AI should be used. For example, recently the Defense Department contacted Google about using image recognition technology for military purposes, and amidst backlash from Google employees, Google dropped out of that. So these advanced technology companies like Amazon, Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft are constantly being asked by companies to develop technologies or refine technologies or deliver technologies to them that gives them an economic advantage or a financial advantage. In some cases, the ethical use of that technology is secondary. And so far, we haven't really had a national voice and a national conversation about how far AI technology can go. The attitude so far, in my perspective, has been let technology and businesses go for it. And business is good, and making money is good, and let them do anything they want with AI that they'd like to. But in the perspective of having a conversation about that, there should be some regulations so that we're mindful of how technology is used. And one of my readers suggested that government legislators are not so good at understanding technology well enough, but I wanted to remind the listeners that Congress uses the Tech Congress. I had a show on Background Mode with Chris Segoyan, who joined the Tech Congress, which is a group of scientists and researchers and interns that advise the U.S. Congress about technology issues. And when they don't have the expertise in the Tech Congress, they can go to other research organizations and form groups and committees and take recommendations from it. So we're not at a loss when it comes to having government intelligent discussion about proper regulation of AI. It's not just a shot in the dark. So that's where we are.
I would add to this that our society functions best when you have tension, among many other things, of course, but when you have tension between free market forces and government regulation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Unfettered capitalism has always proven to lead to excess, to problems, to exploitation, to violence, to pollution, to slave labor, to, you know, near slave labor, to child labor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Overly regulating any particular market will kill it.
Mm-hmm. We forget about things like Upton Sinclair's novel about the terrible conditions in meat factories that turned the last century and the revolutions that occurred in the past.
One of the things that has always horrified me, it's so mind-boggling. I can't even understand the mindset that makes this possible. But the idea that children would be sent into inside machines to repair them, and then it would be cheaper to just turn them on when the children were still in there, because the child could be replaced for less than it would cost to wait the, you know, few minutes for them to get outside of the machinery.
This is why Girl Scout cookies are made with real Girl Scouts.
Not John. Helpful, sir. Not
John.
Not helpful, sir. Bad John. Anyway, so my
for
point
shame.
Is that
we will be adjusting John's algorithm after the show. Don't worry.
I am not going to stand on some kind of platform and say that the government regulators or government legislators would get AI regulation right. But at the same time, I also do not trust tech companies to get it right on their own either.
No.
We
you know,
need
money
that
always,
partnership.
Money always wins out.
We need the partnership. We need the tension. We need the different forces banging heads until we get something that's pretty close to right.
Mm-hmm. That's an important point, Brian. The American story is all about that balance between the two.
Yeah, and sometimes it goes too far in one way, and sometimes it goes too far the other way. And, you know, there is absolute danger in too much government regulation, and there is absolute danger in too much of a free market.
Yes.
Period. And
that's where we are right now with artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I would say
we've had such a culture of technology being so useful to us, and we're so excited about our smartphones and our tablets and our computers and robotics that we think that in a Pollyanna way, we think everything's going great. And suddenly we're starting to realize AI has come so far that it's on the verge of getting out of control without proper regulation.
Well, who was talking recently, I think on one of our shows, about, say, Chinese AIs doing phishing attacks?
Oh, yes, I remember that, but
as a particle,
like
debris.
or American, you know, from a Chinese perspective, American AI.
That was
a
discussion we had last week about 2019 predictions for AI, mm-hmm. and how the open sourcing of AI code
yes.
could lead to bad.
Oh
actors.
Yeah, we talked about that on the Apple Context Machine.
Apple Context Machine.
Yeah. Podcast I've heard about. Yeah. That, I think I was there listening to John talk about that. So it the. AI, right now, we are probably erring towards way too much of free market control for AI. We just don't know it yet. We just haven't seen the repercussions from that too much of a free market.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And when we do, I will have you guys on to talk about it, I'm sure. In the meantime, we're going to stop here until
AI overlords allow us. to talk about it.
Well,
but go ahead, please.
Well, we'll take a shot at it is what we'll do. So in the meantime, stay tuned for the Mac Observer's Artificial Intelligence Podcast, brought to you by John and Brian, both of whom are my guests today. Thank you, Brian, for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Good
and
times.
Now you can go take that nap. John, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And John's off to service for a system update. And I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you later. And in the meantime, be excellent to each other.